Welcome to the continued podcast adventures of Superhero Speak.
But I think many of the people that love this character and that love superheroes in general have used these stories as inspiration to say, you know what? I'm going to do something good in the world. I'm going to make a difference like my hero when I was a kid.
That is my fondest memory of it, because when you're doing comic books, you want them to affect people.
Right.
You want people to care. You want to strike emotions. And I knew that that Clone Saga was striking a lot of emotions.
Can you imagine Pulp Fiction starring Goofy and Mickey Mouse?
I can totally imagine that.
I'm sure somebody's written that one too.
Pounder with cheese and France, Mickey. What? Boy, ale with cheese, Mickey. Yeah. I can totally
see.
I would watch the hell out of that movie.
Yes, I gladly saw sacrifice at my progeny to you, a mighty Marvel beast.
But Neil Adams is somewhere going, it's my time.
How do you measure success?
Hey, everyone. You are listening to Superhero Speak, and I'm your host, Dave.
And John.
And this week, boys and girls, JD is off on assignment, but we have a wonderful guest with us this week. She's returning, second time on the show. John, what do you get if you mix urban fantasy, politics, and an accidentally carnivorous plant?
Me hiding in a corner with a bottle of Jack?
No, you get our guests. Wonderful comic, I Am Hex, and of course I'm talking about the one and only Kirsten Thomas. How are you doing today?
I am doing well.
Cool. It's been a while since we talked to you. Like, yeah. It was episode, for us, it was episode 263.
Oh.
So, it's been a
while. going vaguely in the mists of time there.
Yeah. I mean, the only thing I remember about it was, the most more important thing about it was that you owned a Bengal cat.
Yes. Actually, all three of my cats are behind me on the daybed being intensely cute and sleeping for once. So
that is perfect for an audio podcast.
Yes. At some point, one of them will probably wake up and interject some comments. So be prepared if he does.
Oh, that's what I prepared the questions for. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I remember you had a Kickstarter going for the first issue.
Oh, yeah, that too.
And from my understanding, that went well?
It did go well. We were able to raise more than our goal, which was wonderful. And so we were able to include pages from issue 2, which sort of gave us a jump start on this issue. And so now we're doing the Kickstarter for issue 2, and it's well on its way, and it's very exciting.
Cool. And just to reiterate, we talked about this last time. I believe the plan is to do a 4 issues all together.
That is the plan, yes. So once we do this one, we'll be halfway there. I keep having to tell people, no, not 3 issues, it's 4 issues. They're like, oh, is it done? I'm like, don't sound so happy about it.
Cool. So for listeners who may not have listened to the last episode,
go back and listen to the last episode.
Well,
give them homework.
I was going to say, let's be nice, and could you give them the elevator pitch?
Sure. So basically, I Am Hexed is a urban fantasy political thriller, and so witches have been a part of DC and the world stage forever, basically. And it's only since the 1960s that witches have sort of stood up, and they've been brooms up and looking to get their rights recognized. And now we have Charlotte Helm, who is a junior staffer working for a senator in D.C., and she's just sort of going about her business and contributing to good causes and, you know, doing all her witch dues, but caught up in this political conspiracy of her boss, and then the witch authorities get involved, and so she ends up teaming up with her ex-girlfriend and some other friends to try and figure out who's hunting her, why, and sort of get to the bottom of all this.
Cool. It definitely sounds intriguing. And it's not just, so that's a lot, how do I put this? That's a lot to put into one story. Is it something that you initially thought of the whole thing before you started putting it together, or has it been growing as you work on it?
I think initially, you know, my first idea was I was sick of seeing that witch hunting in the news from sort of conservative outlets. And I said, well, what if the witches are out there?
That's funny, because we mentioned that before in the in our initial interview, and it hasn't changed.
No.
All this time.
No, it hasn't. I was like, oh, some messages keep, you know, I mean, it hasn't changed for hundreds of years. Think about it that way. That's how unoriginal that is. But I thought, okay, well, what if, you know, I'm like, okay, there are witches. They're active in D.C. Maybe they've been sort of behind the scenes this whole time. And I was looking at the news, which unfortunately hasn't changed either. And, you know, it's like, well, so what are some of the struggles that witches could be looking at, you know, sort of in comparison to what everybody else is facing? You know, things like if you use magic on the street, you are stopped by police. It's called a spell stop because you're not supposed to use magic in public, you know, just things like that. You know, you're not supposed to fly your broom after certain hours. So all these little things that, you know, people say, oh, we're making, you know, the world safer. You know, it's who's safer for who?
Right.
You know what I mean? Yeah. And so I wanted to deal with those issues as well as sort of have a political romance conspiracy drama. And so some of the things came out of it while I was outlining, because I loved outline. But yeah, the initial idea was witches in DC, politics, go. Also, I was curious about the election, so that fueled a lot of the writing. I was just so mad. Still mad. So
yeah.
The
initial Kickstarter, you are continuing this streak I'm having apparently of people that are simultaneously telling me, oh, Kickstarters are hard, and then having their Kickstarters go over, two, three, 400%. So your initial Kickstarter was a $10,000 goal, and you went to all the way to $23,000.
Yes.
Is that correct? So beyond that being a really nice indicator of the reception of your idea, what was some of the stuff that you heard from, like, fans or, you know, the reaction from that Kickstarter?
I think one of the things I've heard that's been nice is, you know, the other thing is this story has queer characters. I mean, I sort of joke that, you know, none of my things I write have any straight characters in the lead. I'm like, oh, where are they? What is the reason for having a straight character? What is their justification for being straight? Because it seems like the justification has to be there for a character to be queer. There has to be a plot-related reason. They can't just exist. And so I've gotten, you know, some feedback from people saying, oh, it's just nice to have queer people doing things. Their storyline does not depend on them being, you know, in a relationship, having been in a relationship. They're in a urban fantasy political conspiracy thriller. That's what's happening. And yes, they happen to have dated, you know. So I definitely like that. And then witches, you know, and just a different system of magic. That was really fun to develop. You know, I was thinking about how to make a system of magic that's more accessible. And so doing a lot of that and some of the character design work on this issue too, was dealing with Florence, who does use a wheelchair and a cane, you know, depending on her sort of pain level, you know, day to day. And just making some of those modifications, you know, to things she would use, like her broom, you know, or her wheelchair. And how would you modify those with magic, but not create a world where magic fixes everything? Like, it's like, no, that's not the way. That's erasure. That's gross. You know, magic is not a magic. It's not a cure all, you know, for disability or chronic illness. So,
a lot of authors seem to go that route. Where, I mean, if they obviously if magic cured everything or fixed everything, they wouldn't have a plot. But there always seems to be some kind of weight or consequence to using magic, even if it seems innocuous. Was that something that you'd gone down the road of, or
down the road that way? I mean, if you're overusing magic in ways that are bad, you know, sort of, I'm not going to get into everything because I would love to do another arc. But if you, karmically, you could run into some trouble. If you kept doing bad stuff, there's a possibility that it might come back and bite you in the butt. But it's not like some systems of magic where, oh, you did this horrible spell and now a part of you is going to decay and wither away because you're just full of bad intentions, you know? that wasn't the route I wanted to go with this story. It's just not quite the story I want to tell. I mean, there's bad stuff that happens, but I feel like it's ultimately a happier story than a lot of the things I see, which is kind of what I wanted to do. I wanted it to feel, you know, feel good. Hopefully feel like you can stand up, you know, for things, and these women aren't always in the best position, but there is some definite camaraderie there. You know, it's sort of the three of them against their obstacles, which is a lot of fun to write. Plus, right. Yeah, it's just, plus women supporting women, which I don't see enough of in media, and that's a whole other rant for another day, but.
No, but I understand, too, about being careful and creating a system for magic. I believe a lot of writers think of these things, and good writers like yourself think, okay, how do I prevent this from becoming some kind of a crutch, to solve all the problems? Like one of the things in the show Flash, the TV show Flash, they introduced time travel. Then it's like, well, why can't you just go back in the past and fix all your problems before they start? You know, so there's a weight, there's a cost to traveling through time, you know? And so was that, obviously that was something that was important to you before you started writing, to make sure you had a system in place and it always made sense?
Yeah. I mean, I like to outline and I like to talk it out with my friends. I say, okay, if I do this, you know, and magic works this way, does this make sense? You know, and I have good friends who, you know, Taylor Esposito among them, who will tell me, yes, that makes perfect sense, or I'm not sure what you're talking about, and, you know, perhaps you need more tea or less tea to work this out. he's good about that. But, yeah, I mean, I do sit down and sort of posit scenarios and say, okay, well, if you do this and this, like the spells, you know, I'm jotting them, I'm sort of writing up scenarios, like, okay, if they use this ingredients and this put this together, what would happen? Like, sort of three or four scenarios, and I pick the one that makes the most sense within the world and maybe utilizing some of the properties of the elements, but in a way that's, you know, unique to this magical system. So, yeah. I mean, so it's a lot of fun to design. Just have to, even if I'm not stating all the rules within the book, there are rules that exist, you know.
Right.
So you've got a new Kickstarter now, the reason why you're here, for issue number 2.
Yes.
And again, as last time, the video is pretty cool. Do you still have trouble with the voiceover?
Oh, I just don't like doing videos, and that's just a personal thing. It's weird because I like podcasts are fun. I like video chatting with people, but it's like recording. I just don't like recording, and I don't know why that is. But
it's like a certain pressure, right? And it's like to get it right.
And I'm a perfectionist, so I'm sitting there, and you know, the editor's like, "It's fine." He's like, "No, really, it's fine." I'm like, "No, it's not." It's like, I mean, I'll send him a version. He's like, "Oh, that looked great." I'm like, "You didn't see the 4 other versions I did before this. That's fine with this version I sent you." So, I mean, before I send things to people, it's like I'm drafting and multi-drafting and just going, okay, now it's fit for human eyes, and please don't tear it apart too badly. So,
well, you're already up to just about $7,000 for your $10,000 goal.
Yes.
Your end date is May 15th. How's the response for this Kickstarter going?
It's been pretty good. I mean, we got, you know, sort of an initial push, I think, from, you know, people who'd already read it last time and said, oh, I like this enough to support it again, which thank you very much. And then it's just been a matter of sort of getting the word out. And then, you know, we've been featured on the Kickstarter main page as a feature project, which is a huge help. And it's just, you know, like I always say, like, I'm just happy that it gets funded. If we get anything else, I'm thrilled. But I just want everyone to get paid. That's my goal.
That's a good goal.
Yes. People like to pay bills, so I like to pay the money. So.
Yeah, I see that listed here as one of the goals. People get paid. Yeah.
Yes. Let's pay.
It's not people. A stretch goal, too. That's very nice of you.
Yes. If we could pay people extra, I'm even happier.
So, actually, good question. We're friends with Dirk Manning, who wrote a book called Hope, and they just did a big Kickstarter, him and Kaylin Smith. And one of the things that Dirk said was the problem he found is it was doing so well you know, having to come up with new stretch goals, you know, as they kept doing well. Do you have stretch goals in mind already? And
There are stretch goals in mind, and you know, it's just whether or not we get to them is like, that would be cool. But I think our goals, you know, our initial goals are great, you know, and I mean, the art prints are just so gorgeous. I mean, I just want to put them on my walls right now. I think Little Corvus, you know, their print of the Three Witches has gotten a lot of traction on Twitter. And Elaine Grace's one is just, I just remember just looking at the art and just having minimal feedback, just saying, oh, can you just tweak this? And then it's perfect. You know, just not having to say, go back and forth. And then Mildred Lewis's print, and that's the one I'm talking about that has, you know, Florence and her broom. And I wanted her to have a little bit of a seat on her broom, a little bit of a back support. So she's doing tricks, you know, she's sort of got that stability, and she picked out, you know, she did such a great job and just making it fit her aesthetic. And it looks so cool. So I'm just so happy. You want to draw art for my book? I love you. So I got to see a lot of the people that are involved in this at Emerald City Comic Con, which is fantastic. Got to tell them to their faces how much I loved it, and sort of, you know, sort of fangirl a little bit. So that was terrific.
Oh, you were at the Emerald City Comic Con. Okay. Because another person whose Kickstarter we were following was Kit Steele, and she was up there.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, and that's another Kickstarter where I don't know what it is about with us and Kickstarters these days, but it's her Kickstarter was supposed to be $2,000 she went for, and I think she ended up with like $16,900 and had to come up with new stretch goals on the fly while she was there at Emerald City.
It's the luck of the Irish, John. It's all your fault.
sure. But putting all this together, you've got t-shirts and all this. What was it like trying to figure out what you wanted to come up with, and like how much input did you get from, like, you must have fans now, right?
Yeah, and I mean, we do get input. Like, we just did a new reward tier, you know, today, where you can, someone was like, oh, can I buy the comic this way or do this? And, you know, so we took that in mind. And one thing that was popular were, you know, like the pins last time were really popular. And yeah, I mean, I love them, and they look really, really neat on bags. And then you sort of look at what worked last time, what didn't work, you know, what was sort of usable. You know, and then we sent out, you know, surveys like on the Believe Witches or Brooms Up, you know, those kind of things, and what people wanted. So I like that we got that input, and they said, oh, we like this one better. I'm like, okay, let's go with that one. That's the one everyone likes. I mean, they all look really cool, but yeah, it's about what people want on your walls, or you want to stick on your backpack, or you want a temporary tattoo of.
So are we looking at, I don't know, I forget when the episode was last that we talked. I know it was 263, but I can't remember when.
About 10 months ago, I believe.
10 months ago?
Yeah.
So is that going to be the lead time between, like, issue 3 and then issue 4? This was supposed to be a 4-issue, right?
Yeah. That's what, you know, we're thinking. I mean, because with the estimated delivery day is about September of this year.
Mm-hmm. And you're going to do a Kickstarter for each one then?
That's the plan right now, yeah. I mean, obviously we're not going to do, you know, delivery and then let's do the next Kickstarter. It's like, oh, let's have a little chance for everyone to rest and recuperate and breathe, you know.
Oh.
Yeah.
So it's really, you're saying this is a hell of a lot of work.
Well, I mean, because you think about, you know, Christiane, who does the fantastic interiors. I mean, think about how much work that is for her to, you know, draw them and ink them and color them. And then, you know, Taylor's got to letter everything. So it's, you know, and then you have to allow a little bit of cushion time in case somebody gets a, you know, surprise gig. You know, so if we can deliver it sooner, wonderful. But, you know, we sort of have an estimated date of this is when we will have it out by. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Then you have to pay the bills, so you know.
Yeah, I mean, someone yeah, there's been sometimes people are like, oh my gosh, I've got to take this. It's like, okay, you know, I like, you know, bills. You have to pay them, as you say. It's like, just do it.
Yeah. Unfortunately, they don't stop coming, do they?
No. I feel like this is all my friends and I are talking about. It's like, oh, it's April. It's that season. So everybody's just kind of a little tired right now.
Yeah, we wish we could pay the bills, but unfortunately, we still both have to have day jobs in order to do this.
Yeah, I mean, I think it would be great if we had a universal basic income. That'd be fantastic. Think about how much more you could do.
Yeah, I've heard talk about that on the political trail. It's an interesting thing, and there's a lot of economic research behind it that says that it might actually work. So,
well, it will work. I think it'll happen in, I'm hoping, less than 10 years, but I would not be surprised if it takes 10 years at least to happen. But it's been shown that if you give people enough money that they have disposable income, they put it back in the economy. Imagine that.
At that tier, yeah.
So, I mean, I think that's definitely, you know, I don't have that in the book. I mean, that would be fun to do a mini issue around universal basic income. How do witches utilize it? That would be kind of cute.
If you give them unlimited newt, tongue of newt, they will use all the tongue of newt.
Yes. What are they going to do with it? What spells will they cast? And what will teenage witches do with all that newt? It's probably a Halloween thing. That would end badly, I think.
Maybe we have the premise of the next series.
Uh-oh. All
right. That would definitely be a very lighthearted sequel. Overrun by Eye of Newt, or giant newts run wild.
So, like, what kind of things are coming out now that that catch your eye? I mean, you've got your own creations going on, and I don't remember if we talked about what stuff helped inspire what you're doing now besides your own experiences. But is there anything coming out now, like any other creators' works, or hey, maybe even Marvel movie that might be coming out soon that.
Oh dear, you really want to hear my opinion on that?
Sure.
I'm not watching that movie. I don't care at this point. I'm a terrible person, I know. It's like Game of Thrones for me. It's like I'm thrilled everyone else likes it. I don't watch it, you know, and I would be interested to see, you know, Marvel's, you know, Loki series, if they're doing a Falcon and Bucky Barnes road trip series. That would be hilarious, I hope. But true. I'm kind of over the, let's have an endless movie that's mostly fight scenes, when I feel it would be better served by actually a TV series or a mini series that you could actually delve into the character dynamics a little more. I still think the shawarma scene has a lot more character development than a good portion of some of the movies, you know? So I think that we missed out a little bit on actually making those connections with the characters so you cared, you know, a little more. I have this joke about a book series I read a while ago that they just kept introducing so many characters that when a character got killed off, I remember my sister was reading it with me and she said, was I supposed to care or know who they were? I was like, well, for 20 pages, yeah, you were.
That's the Game of Thrones.
Oh, man. I know. And it's like, I'm sitting here eternally going, you know, if I was a betting woman, I could be making a lot of money on who's died in the past few years, and I don't even watch the show. You know, and I think the dragons are cool, and I think there's some really cool symbolism and, you know, metaphors and all that. And I think Brandon is fantastic, you know, and I think she should knock, you know, a bunch of people down, and I hope she doesn't die. But I just, that's not what I've been watching this year. Honestly, I've been watching a lot of Asian dramas lately, which was sort of my moratorium on stuff directed by straight white dudes. I did that January. I said, you know what I'm going to do this year? I'm going to watch stuff that's not directed by straight white dudes. And it served me well for the past few months. Just a lot of variety in sort of genres I found is fun in terms of, you know, stimulating writing. I'm watching one called The Fiery Priest, which is absolutely cackle out loud hysterical at least once an episode. It sort of goes over the top, comes out the other side, and is charming, if that makes sense. It's fun. There's a sort of a revenge drama called Kill It about a assassin who moonlights as a veterinarian and the cop who's chasing him. So definitely all over the map. But I just wanted to watch stuff that wasn't the same superhero stuff anymore. So, you know what? I'm just tired. I think Captain Marvel is great. I'm so happy that women are on screen more. I'm so glad that that movie is crushing every possible box office record. I think that was great that the boycott didn't work at all. So I feel like we should have had that movie 4 years ago. I was like, wow, you just noticed that women read comics. Okay.
Actually, speaking of, I mean, given your proclivities, Brienne of Tarth in Game of Thrones, that storyline would actually, you'd actually like that. The way it ended up this last episode, actually.
Oh, I saw the gifs. I was a happy person, even though I don't even watch the show. I was like, oh, that's good. Now I'm concerned about her welfare. Because now that that's happened, I'm just like, oh, no, this is bad. This is a bad thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Wanted on Game of Thrones.
She got her life's work. Now, oh, well.
Yeah, that's what I've noticed. I'm like, oh. I mean, I thought Sansa's armor was gorgeous, you know, and finally, you know, as I said, I didn't watch the show, and I've been, you know, wanting to draw a sword on her behalf for years. So, yeah, and I think it's interesting, this sort of the cultural phenomenon that Game of Thrones has become, and how some shows become that and some shows just don't, you know? Like Winona Earp, it's an amazing show. Yeah, but it hasn't quite done that cultural phenomenon where everyone is glued to HBO and, you know, fighting over spoilers in the comments.
Yeah, that one got relegated to like the B status, you know, like not popular, but people watch it, but not popular.
I just always felt like Game of Thrones, no offense to any fans out there, but I just kind of felt like it was popular for the wrong reasons. It's not, I don't think it's very compelling storytelling, you know? It's more shock and awe over and over and over again, you know, and that's what draws people in. And I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong, you know?
I don't know. I just can't stay. I also don't, I'm not here for animal harm, so that's just a button for me. Yeah.
But I do feel that given your comments on the Marvel movies, I feel like I need to say something. Our guests' opinions do not necessarily reflect those of Superhero Speak. Just, you know, I got to cover our fan base. Just got to put that out there.
Hey,
I will add that I believe Winter Soldier is far and away the best Marvel comic movie ever, and possibly one of the best action movies of all time. So,
okay.
But it's covered there. No, I will watch that movie if it's playing anywhere. I will drop what I'm doing and I will watch that movie, and I probably will fight someone over it. So.
Nice.
And
the superhero equivalent of 3 Days of the Condor. Plus, they have Robert Redford in it, so it's perfection. Yeah, I'm like, I mean, when I saw when he was in the movie, I remember I shrieked to the theater, and I'm like, you know, my friend was with me, like, shut up, I'm like, no, you don't understand, like, tell me later.
So you're a fan of The Natural, then, right?
Oh God, yes, I love. Yeah, no, and I'm just I like Robert Redford and Paul Newman, and I watched all those movies as a kid, and so. Definitely love those movies.
And actually, speaking of our fans, we have a little bit of business that we've got to take care of. Real quick, John knows what I'm talking about, I hope. We've been doing our Nerd Madness tournament on Twitter, where fans vote. We had 4 regions. Of course, it was movies, TV, comics, and anime. And we were down to our final 4. And so we need to announce the results of that. John, do you want to say the first one, which was movies versus anime, because anime is your thing?
Mm-hmm. So for that, we have on the movie side, the Spider-Verse, which is at 63%, and Castlevania, the anime. Well, the definition of anime is getting stretched a little bit these days, but then it's getting hard. It's actually... The criteria for the definition has been stretched a lot because of you know, where things are made and by whom, whatever. But the quote unquote anime from Netflix, Castlevania, is at 37%.
Cool. Yes. So the winner was Into the Spider-Verse.
I don't know. It could have. I have to give it to Spider-Verse just because it's so good, but you have to check out Castlevania. I mean, it made it this far, and I'm telling people, go to Netflix if you've got a Netflix account and check out Castlevania. It was really well done.
Oh, my gosh. It was amazing. I mean, even if you have no familiarity with games or anything, it's like, I don't care if you don't like Dracula. It was a phenomenal anime.
Oh, you know? Great. You saw it, too. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. No, I was live texting my best friend while we were watching it, yelling at each other because, you know, these characters are so great. And, I mean, the animation was just superb.
But I guess for you, it was the character interaction and, basically the character interaction, the depth of the characterizations that were going on that might have gotten you.
Well, the OT3 definitely got me. That was a lot of fun. I mean, I'm for competence porn, and they're all very good at what they do. And when they're doing it together, it's even better. So
nice.
I love leverage, if you can't tell.
Cool. And then our other matchup was comics versus TV, and it was the comic book story of professional wrestling, which I am shocked got to the final, versus Netflix's Daredevil. And the winner was the comic book story of professional wrestling. Yes, JD, who is not here.
I got something stuck in my throat.
got the writer of the book to encourage his fans to vote for it. And of course they won. So that leaves for our final matchup, boys and girls. Make sure you pay attention to Twitter this week. It'll be Into the Spider-Verse versus the comic book story of professional wrestling. That is an interesting final matchup. Yeah. So I haven't read the professional wrestling comic, but I hear from all of its fans it's like one of the best kept secrets in the comic book world. So we shall see.
Well, I follow the author on Twitter, so it's not a best kept secret from me, but yeah.
Yes.
No, I think that's going to be definitely an interesting matchup. I just think Into the Spider-Verse has justifiably gotten, you know, so much attention and acclaim. And I think it's certainly moved people's opinions who might not have otherwise seen that kind of movie, which is terrific.
Right.
You know, it's just, yes, you can like this kind of movie. It's okay.
It was basically the best of its genre. I mean, it's better than even than the live action movies. It's just, I don't know. For me, it was like one of the best movies I've seen in a very long time. I know, Dave, you didn't like it. Just Jimmy. Oh, do not go to Ben Rowe.
I don't love it as much as everyone else did, but that's another story. All right, cool. So, So the Kickstarter ends in May.
It does.
And then you said the plan is to deliver by September.
Yes, that's our sort of, it will be delivered. That's our delivery date. You know, as I say, if things happen earlier, we're happy. But
I guess I should do due diligence, or what do they call it when you say, full disclosure. I went looking for issue number one. Before we did this interview, could not find it, decided, well, I know I can get issue number one definitely one way, and so I am now a supporter of your Kickstarter.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. You should have been able to get it on the website.
I couldn't find it for some reason, but then again, I was really tired, and I took a nap before I came here, so.
That can be good, and that can be bad when it comes to the internet.
Yeah, well, for me, it doesn't matter. Either way, I don't sound great. You mean the I Am Hex website? Is that what you call it? Or?
Yeah, because we've got a link to that on the official Twitter, so you should be able to find it there. And if it's gone down unexpectedly, I will be a very cross person. It's usually our direct people. Although I do have copies in my home, of course. Can ship them. Not that many copies.
Cool. Do you have any other projects that you're working on right now, or anything, any irons in the fire?
Oh, I'm always working on stuff. I joke that I have, you know, more works in progress than I have limbs. So I've got, I'm alternating two right now, and one is kind of a set in sort of dealing with prohibition. And then one is dealing with artificial intelligence. So those kind of wildly different subjects. But the artificial intelligence angle is also sort of a police procedural. So there's a couple things happening there. And yes, all the characters involved are queer, which will come as a complete shock to anyone who's read I Am Hexed. So,
I don't believe it.
No, just I think I'm so frustrated with things like, you know, the Magicians, what happened on the Magicians, and then it's like, oh wait, characters are queer, but let's bridge them. But it's for plot development, or, you know, let's have all these justification. Like, can they just, I just want to put queer people in all the stories we didn't get to see growing up, you know, including the ridiculous, you know, it's a sappy love story, or it's an over-the-top action story, whatever it is. I just want it to be so normal. I'm like, oh, it's another one of those. Okay. You know, it just completely, you know, goes by. You're like, I could see, watch that. There's 12 of them, you know, not just this is, because I don't want it to be the first, you know, it's always the first has to be perfect, has to be revolutionary. Like, how, we just need to be inundated with this stuff. You know, how many bad monster movies are there? How many bad action movies are there, you know, with straight dudes with glistening muscles and, you know, ridiculously tragic backstories? And,
uncountable.
Yeah, and, you know, closets full of women who are dead and, you know, about to die, or, you know, in some state of emotional distress. You know, like, no, can we just have queer people who don't die in the end? Maybe? That'd be super cool. Oh, the Bengal's woken up and is chewing on my laptop cord. Awesome.
Tasty.
So it's Monday.
I think you bring up a really great point when it comes to queer characters,
or just any characters that are not like, I mean, to put a point on it, straight and white, right? I mean, even with a lot of sitcoms and stuff, it's they're always, that's the plot point, is that they are that, not. It's not a sitcom about somebody who just happens to be.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, the very nice One Day at a Time, which of course got canned by Netflix. You know, you had a couple queer characters on there, and yes, there was a coming out episode, but that wasn't her whole arc. You know, It was her, you know, she found, you know, acceptance. She realized, you know, who had issues with, you know, her identity, and learned to let that go, or to move past it and realize that they were the ones losing out. She wasn't losing out, you know, and, you know, her finding a partner who, you know, adorable together, and, you know, different pronoun use. I mean, the way that show addressed various issues was just always so funny and on point without being preachy.
Right. The point that I was trying to make before John stepped on.
Before I rudely interrupted him. Just rude.
So the first thing is, like, one of my best friends growing up is gay, right? And it's not like, and he's been out of the closet, for lack of a better term, since I think we were 18. And, like, it's not you know, it's just who he is. It's not, it doesn't define his whole life. It's just a characteristic of him, you know? And,
yeah.
And then like, you watch something like Will and Grace, right?
Yeah. On my mind too.
Which gets credited as, bringing homosexuality into the American conscious and making it more acceptable. But yet every episode, there's at least three or four jokes about being gay. You know, and it's what defines the two main characters, the two main male characters the whole time. And it's just like, you know, why can't we just have a sitcom where they happen to be gay? Why does it have to be the defining thing over and beat us over the head over and over again? Like you said, being preachy about it. I think one way that they did it beautifully is, Sulu in the new Star Trek movies, you know? Like, yes, he went to his apartment in the one movie and saw his husband, and that was it. He moved on. It wasn't defining or anything through the story, as it were.
Well, another a show that does this really well is Brooklyn Nine-Nine. I mean,
yes.
Oh my gosh!
I haven't seen that one.
Oh, no? Oh, you have to watch it.
Just go on Tumblr and look for the gift sets, and you will.
Tumblr? I'm trying to stay away. I'm trying to quit. Sorry.
Oh no! Well, DreamWidth is. I mean, it's the gift sets that keep me coming back because no other platform has quite managed that. You know. Plus, it's a really great way to find things that I want to then post other places. But no, that show does it really well. And I mean, certainly for I Am Hexed, you know, both Charlie and Jaya, you know, are queer, but that's not, you know, what the story is about, you know, and guess what? They used to date. And guess what? There's some awkwardness because what do you do when you need help? And who do you go to? You go to your ex-girlfriend who you probably still have feelings for. And can they sort of get over their issue, you know, whatever it was in the relationship, but it's not the fact that they, you know, we're in love. It's, wait, we're being chased by secret government, you know, agencies or, you know, whatever it is. It's
as it happens.
Yeah. And an accidentally carnivorous plant. And, you know, oh, by the way, there's some romantic tension, you know, but that's not, you know, what they're there for. You know what I mean?
Right. It's not an overwhelming plot point, right?
Yeah. No, it's not a plot point at all. It's like, oh, I'm going to my girlfriend, ex-girlfriend for help. Because she also happens to be kind of a backstage kind of fixer sort of person who likes to blow shit up in her spare time. And that's Jaya, you know. And, yeah, she happens to be queer, you know.
Right.
But she doesn't, you know, she doesn't have a horribly angsty backstory that is going to come up, you know. And, you know, if we had four arcs or something, that you know, where she's – that's going to be the story. It's like, no, actually she's fine with who she is. She likes who she is. And – the issues that they may or may not have with their families or friends have nothing to do with their sexualities. There's other stuff going on. You know, it's like none of my friends like, oh, you're queer. That's nice. Doesn't matter. You know, I mean, it matters in one sense, but it's not, you know, you don't slot people into those boxes unless you're a jerk.
Right.
And I think I'm hoping that media is starting to get that slowly at the pace of molasses. But then, you know, things will happen. I say, oh, no, wait.
It's
not happening, you know?
It's the difference between them being a character and a caricature. Right?
Yeah. So I see better examples of it, certainly. But, you know, but then I see works where, you know, the author will have written characters as, you know, unabashedly queer. It's like they are queer. And then they get straight, you know, they get straight washed or it gets minimized or they get, you know, whitewashed, which is a whole, you know, another letter of grossness. It's like, no, they are who they are, and you don't need to twist it and turn it so the audience feels more comfortable. The audience needs to get over their, you know, various issues, whatever they are, and to say, oh, these are people, and, you know, who they sleep with or do not sleep with is none of your business and has nothing to do with how well they can do their jobs, or whether they should be allowed to marry and all those other things. So I wanted to, and I Am Hexed, the world is not perfect. Certainly there's all kinds of issues, but I did want to make it a world where these two women, you know, three women now with Lawrence coming in, are able to be themselves, you know, and own their identities.
Right,
so that is just really rewarding to write. No, plus they're getting to do magic and throw spells at people. Who doesn't want to do that? You know? Gosh, if I had an accidentally carnivorous plant, it would be amazing. I would take that thing everywhere with me. You know?
I was going to say the accidentally carnivorous plant looks really, you know, like almost like a chibi or something in the background of some of the pictures.
Yes, I know, and it's. That was, you know, the illustration. There's some stuff that happens with the plant, which will be, you'll get to see in this issue. And then there's certain developments, but I just love I love that cover. I mean, I just think it's such a fun cover, you know, just sort of the, you know, Florence being so intent on her work and then you got this thing in the background and what exactly is it doing? But it's not the plant's fault. You know, the plant has been used for ill. And so the plant has its own little plot arc in the course of the story, which is also cool. So, I'm pro-plant, if you can't tell.
I think that's a safe position, pro-plant.
Yeah, well, it's just I'm, you know, I'm a witch, so I'm always pro-plant and trying to keep them alive. So, yeah.
Yeah, especially these days.
Yeah, well, I've got lavender on my door, and I'm going to plant a giant lavender bush in my backyard this year, I hope. So I'm very excited. Make it impossible. Really great. But no, it's a really fun, story to write. I love all the characters, and yeah, I hope I get to do more with them at some point.
You thinking of going more than 4 issues, or doing another round with this universe?
Oh, I'd love to. It would. The four issues conclude one story arc. So certainly, if there was interest, and I could, I would love to write more for them. Because I have all kinds of ideas about the world, and you start, like in this issue, you start to, there's witches in the government already because they sort of confronted Jaya and Charlie in the last issue, but there's a magical authority, and you start to get some of that in these issues, but I would love to really dig into that, the fact that it's been around for hundreds of years, and it's been behind the scenes, and it's vastly powerful, and it's not always a good thing, So, yeah, certainly I have all kinds of ideas, both in present day and some ideas for sort of the history of this world and magic and witches. Yes. Love to write more. Please, let me write more.
So, hard question. What do you think of the general acceptance or the What do you think of how things are for like independent creators like you? Because there are a lot of large comic book places now. You've got Zenoscope, Source Point Press, a bunch of other, second tier and third tier groups. You've got the big two, and then there are a slew of people like you that are just creating all of this wonderful stuff. But what do you think the acceptance of that is now? And is it getting easier for people like you to get your stuff out there and for people to say, hey, this doesn't have DC on it? I'll still read it.
I think, well, obviously things like Kickstarter, Indiegogo make it way more accessible because there's no way people could have the kind of success that they do as indie creators without them. Mm-hmm. Those tools are essential. I think it's a lot better. I think it can be even better. I think we need a union. That's something we really need in comics. I think that there are always going to be people who will just go for the big two. And I think that's understandable. It's like your football team. You're not going to root for anybody else. That's what you know. But I think that as there are more indie creators, as there are more indie publishers, that those are more widespread, both online and, services like Comixology, where you can get stuff online. You don't have to go to a comic shop. That, too, has been a huge boom to indie creators because as someone, who's a woman, who's queer, going into those shops, and I always make this joke, which isn't really a joke, it's like they freeze, Not all the staff, certainly, but all the guys that are in there doing their tabletop gaming in the back who haven't washed in 4 days, and they always see me in these shops. They freeze. Like I'm a velociraptor or something and I'm going to attack them. And, it's like, I know what I'm there for. I just want to get my books and then leave. And I've been in some shops which are great, and the owners are like, oh, this is a person who wants to give us money for products we are selling. This is fantastic. And then I've been in shops where it's like the hair on the back of your neck goes up and you just leave as soon as you can. So I think that having services that allow you to say, oh, I'd like to buy this book, but I don't want to go in a shop because I don't feel comfortable, or I want to read it in a digital format, and being able to do that, plus web comics have taken, have gotten even bigger now, where you can just start a web comic. And I don't mean just start it as in just upload it magically becomes popular, but The tools that are there now are way, way better, and you can build a following social media. So I think all those things make it better. But obviously it's not a perfect system. There are still barriers, to indie creators, and I think that it would be wonderful we had even more tools out there. And I think there's a lot of publishers who are aware of that. And I think that a lot of us are working towards that. But I think it's like anything, when you are an indie person, you're a freelancer. So it's always a little bit of a sort of a little bit of an uphill battle. You're just trying to get your stuff and make it and work your job and all that stuff. And hello, there's a bagel. Yes, yes, yes. You're trying to earn extra money to buy extra cat food for someone who's a complete diva. Yes. Yeah.
All right. Well, I have two follow-up things on that. Number one, to our fans who are playing tabletop games in their local comic book shop.
Please, please.
Again, our views of our guests do not necessarily reflect those superheroes. But, you know, it's funny. We talked to a lot of indie creators, and a couple of them have said this, and I think this is true. You keep hearing from the big two that comics are dying, but I don't think that's true. I think there's a bigger indie audience growing because people still like the format of visual storytelling, regardless of what's going on. I just think one of the problems you have is, let's be honest, this is Batman's 80th anniversary year.
Yeah.
You know, Superman's been around 2 years longer, I believe. Spider-Man has been around since the 60s. How many new superhero archetypes and how many times can you watch Batman catch the Joker or read Batman catch the Joker? Like, I think that's the problem is that the stories have been told and they've been told over and over again. So when something like I Am Hexed comes along, it grabs people's attention because it's like, oh, this is different. It's in the format I like and you're telling a different story, you know?
Yeah. And I think that, I mean, Batman is going to be around probably forever. Mm-hmm. We'll never age, you know, but I think that that's why, you know, another story, you know, even from the same publisher, you know, if they introduce other characters or they introduce, you know, they can revamp some characters and it goes well, is because you're not seeing the same story. It's like, and I don't dislike Batman at all, but I mean, there's something to be said about his parenting, but the character is... Do you want to hear my TED talk on the Robins? but I think that we do need more stories, and that's what I'm talking about. You know, put all the queer people in all the stories we haven't seen them in before. Because it's not that those stories are, you know, worthless. It's that we have seen them a lot, you know, and we need new stories, and we need new perspectives too. You know, I mean. Things like Dumplin', you know, which was an utterly delightful movie, you know, but it's a perspective we don't usually see, you know, that of a fat girl who, you know, learns to own, you know, and love her body, you know, and just that was, I mean, it was so joyful. Plus it's got Dolly Parton music, which is amazing. But I think that, you know, if we can embrace those stories, you know, and give them that space, I think that will ultimately serve the comic industry so much better that if the big two refuse to acknowledge the fact that, you know what's happening? Book publishers are catching on to this. Book publishers are finding that they can reel in younger readers with these graphic novels. And, oh, look, you've got a bestseller. Oh, look, you've got another bestseller. Instead of saying, oh, well, we can't move Batman the way we used to 50 years ago. Guess what? Everybody knows Batman. You know, give them, you know, kid Iron Man or kid Flash. I mean, give them some younger perspectives, give them some different perspectives, give them other universes, you know, just expand the world and don't revamp everything every year. We don't need you to start from zero every year because that puts people off, you know, make the rewards, you know, the collectible covers, do some other formats, but don't say you have to have, you have to buy all 12 variants, you know. I mean, that's just, I'm not going to do that. I don't know a lot of people are going to do that. And the other thing is, like, we have a generation, you know, the millennials and the people who are coming after us. It's like, we don't have the same kind of disposable income either. You know, so we are sort of, we're more careful about where we're spending our money. And if we can get an online subscription to a bunch of comics that we like, and it's reasonable, that's what we're going to do. We're not going to go to a shop and buy everything, buy 14 variant covers. So I think that the publishers have to adjust to the way things are changing and the way that they can leverage social media. They can leverage indie creators without exploiting them.
See, you said like people won't not watch their teams with, you know, DC and Marvel, right? I'm thinking about it, and I'm thinking, well, they'll watch the NBA, but they'll also watch college basketball, right? And it's like, for me, I'm thinking that, you know, DC is my NBA, and my college basketball is like, I don't know, Zenoscope, I'd say, because I follow a bunch of those storylines too, because they're different and new and interesting and, you know, that sort of thing. I mean, so you can branch out, but then you hit that income wall.
Yeah, and I think that I'm so picky that I'll, you know, pick a couple books that I want, and then, you know, I might catch up digitally. The other thing is I don't like to have a lot of clutter, and so it's like there's some books I might buy physical copies, you know, do your pull list or whatever, but I really like the freedom to say, oh, I'd like to just read this issue of Venom because it had a really adorable and, for a certain value of adorable, scene between you know, Eddie and the symbiote, you know, and then I want to inflict it on as many people as I can, you know, whatever it is, you know, or try out. That's the other thing. I like that I can say, oh, these three comics are recommended to me. I can go to my tablet and download them. And then if I want to, I could just buy the next issue. I don't have to fight my way through traffic and wonder if it's going to be there and deal with people who are annoying. It's, I can just get it right now. And you can also just like message your friends and say, oh, by the way, this thing is on sale for $1.99. Download it now. You know? So I think that the ability to see things digitally is just such a huge step forward for the industry. And I know some people just don't like it because they like to have physical copies. And I think there's definite value in having physical copies of books. You know, like there's certain books that I will have digital and physical copies of. Like there's certain, like DVDs, you know, for example. I have MASH on DVD because Netflix pulls it. They have it and they pull it. Or like Korean dramas where you can only find them for so long on streaming and then they go away. So you just have to buy certain things or they mean a lot. but no, I just think that there's so much more space for the industry. And to hear that comics is dying, I'm like, where are you looking? Are you looking out of one window? You know, I mean, where are you? Are you not, you're not online. You're not talking to indie creators. You're not going to the places like Emerald City Comic Con and seeing the sea of people looking for new stuff. You know, there's so many people there. And sure, a lot of them, you know, like, oh, I want you to draw Batman for me. But a lot of them were flocking to people who are doing something different.
Right. You
know? So that's a missed opportunity, certainly. And that makes me sad when people say that. I'm like, well, then you're not really looking at comics. You're looking at one type. You're looking at one world.
Right.
You know. So, need to move forward. Progress.
No, and I think it's, you know, part of the issue is, you know, Marvel makes billions of dollars on their movies, and then they go, how come no one's buying the latest issue of X-Men? It's because you've rebooted the team 5 times this year, and people are getting a little tired of it, you know?
Well, the other thing is you don't have that crossover between the movie and the comic audience because you're not advertising.
No, exactly.
I mean, for the movie, you should advertise the comics. You should have digital downloads that go with the tickets. You should have all kinds of little perks. And I just, it's so frustrating to say, well, why didn't they want that? Did they know it exists? You know, seeing online, someone is saying, well, where do you buy comics? You need to raise awareness of where you can get comics that you don't just need them. You can't get for shop. Because when I was little, you could buy them at the grocery store.
Oh, I completely agree. And it's also,
I mean, that's where I was reading, you know, I mean, I was really little. I was reaching as far as I could reach up, and it wasn't always age appropriate, but I read as good before my mom was out of the checkout line, and then I had to go. But that's where I read all these comics, and they were right there, you know, and people were reading them and buying them, and now we don't have them. Like, you need to get them back in grocery stores. And I guarantee you, if you put those in the checkout lines, they're going to get read and bought because people are so bored. Please give them something besides tabloids. You know, if you put Spider-Man there, if you put, you know, Zenoscope books. I mean, if you put them there, you're going to see an increase in sales. You know, so it's just that to me. It's like, why aren't they in the why aren't comics in supermarkets anymore?
Because people are more interested in what celebrities divorcing what other celebrity and who saw Sasquatch last.
I don't even know their names. I'm so often like, I don't, who are these people? I'm so confused. Like, I'm like staying there with the little old lady next to me. She's going, do you know who they are? No idea. Just can totally lost. Like, a woman in her 80s and I are in a similar boat, so I know what kind of little old lady I'm going to be. No. So I just am frustrated when I see those kind of, you know, statements from people, or the people who are just mad because the industry is not exactly what it was for them, you know, their specific needs. Like, if you're not happy with it, just read your books. But don't come over to where we are and we're trying to do something different and provide these books and then get mad because it's not for you. It's like, it doesn't have to be for you. You know, right. Batman is not written for me specifically. I might enjoy Batman, but there's a lot of what goes into it that I'm just like, it's just not my thing, you know. Now, Jason Todd, that's totally my thing. Batman, not so much, you know. So certain storylines are enjoyable, but the whole, it's sort of, it's recycled. You know, he doesn't get older, and he doesn't really lose. He gets over everything, and then he gets back. You know.
Okay. Oh, so you had mentioned Emerald City Comic Con earlier. Have you been making your way to conventions?
I have. One second while I'm going to answer you while I pry a cat out of my desk.
Oh, get the crowbar. Yeah.
Yeah, no. I wish you could see it. I've got two cats, a Bengal, and a tiny angry part Siamese. So I went to Emerald City, but certainly if I'm not tabling, it's kind of, you know, kind of not as fun to just go and walk around for 4 days for me.
Right.
Yeah. So if I table, then I'd certainly go. And I think that James, the editor on I Am Hexed, is going to go to FlameCon, and I don't know if I'll go or not. But I think Little Corvus will be there as well. But yeah, I'm not a hike around Comic-Con for 4 days type of person.
I meant, are you going to be tabling at any cons coming up?
I might go to FlameCon, but I don't know for sure. But other than that, I don't have any plans. It's just mostly been getting this, you know, underway and done and working on other stuff at the moment. So I'd certainly like to in the future, definitely.
Okay. Because, I mean, we had said earlier, obviously, your first Kickstarter did well, and the fans of that obviously are responding to this one. So you're obviously gaining fans. Have you met a lot of your fans, and what's the reception like when the?
I've met a few in Emerald City, and you know, people like the book, which was great to hear.
Is that an interesting thing when you meet a fan for the first time?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting, you know, you find out sort of at what level they enjoyed you, what part of it, you know, because mm-hmm. it's not necessarily what you might expect. And they say, oh, I like this because of this reason, or this is what stood out to me. And so that's really gratifying. You know, it's like with any creative work, what you put into it, they may be getting something totally different out of, which is
right.
Which is cool and valid. I believe there was someone who dressed up as Florence, I think they posted on Twitter a while ago, and that was extremely cool. But yeah, I just think like with any creative work, you know, people are going to take various things from it. And, you know, I hope people take, you know, good things from it.
Right.
Yeah. But I would love to see, you know, what people come up with from this, and I'd love to see people's, you know, interpretation of the characters, you know, people want to draw, you know, the characters, that would be super cool. You know, what do they think of the glyphs? You know, what do they think of the world? So I always like to hear, you know, what sort of see what people, you know, thought of it.
Right. Well, wait till you see people start cosplaying as your characters.
That would be amazing. I would love to see pictures of people cosplaying these characters. I mean, they have such, you know, distinct styles. You know, that was one of the things that, you know, as creating them, it's like, well, it's because they sort of showed up, it's sort of already sort of fleshed out, you know, with their own backstories, and that was just really neat. But yeah, they are very distinct women. They look nothing alike.
Right.
Not even, you know, accepting the fact that, you know, they're black and Indian and white, but aside from that, you know, they couldn't share clothes. Totally different styles. It would not work.
Right. Well, that's something people who are listening to this episode who might be fans of the book You know, you should get yourself on cosplay and Instagram it and tag Kirsten in your posts, and I'm sure she'll love it.
Tag me on Twitter if you draw something with the characters, please. I'd love to see it.
Yes. Cool.
Awesome.
And speaking of social media, we're actually kind of we're getting to about an hour here. So where can people find you online?
I'm on Twitter at Kat Ann Thompson, and that's K-A-T Ann Thompson. I have Facebook, but I'm really not active there.
Okay.
So Twitter is where you will find me, and then I can direct you anywhere else. But that's where I live, basically.
It's an interesting place to live at times.
Yes, somewhat perilous. And I'm understanding lots of people are abandoning it until after the big movie. So it may be a ghost town this week.
I think you're probably right.
Yeah.
It's kind of funny to watch.
Well, did you hear? I've been actually trying to avoid a lot of social media because apparently I can't even remember what country he was from, some billionaire was able to get an early premiere of the movie for a private viewing, and somebody at the viewing taped the last 10 minutes and posted online.
Well, of course they did.
I heard that. It was just awful. Why would you do that? That's just such a nasty thing to do.
Because, I don't know. People with money, look what I can do kind of thing.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. No, I would prefer to be unspoiled for those kind of things. You know, it's just like, no, just let me enjoy the story as it plays out. Don't tell me what's going to happen unless it's
right.
Something terribly egregious. You know, if someone's going to say, oh, by the way, a dog dies. Okay, I know. That's why I will avoid that. I fast forward through those minutes of John Wick.
Yeah.
I was just very upset. No, but I think that spoiler culture is, you know, there's some toxic elements there, certainly.
Yeah.
I think content warnings are great, but deliberately leaking something, that just seems malicious. You know, you're just trying to spoil the fun for other people.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, and I'm actually surprised. Like, I saw a couple articles talking about it, but I haven't really run into the footage. I mean, I haven't been looking for it either. I'm guessing, you know, Disney sent their team of flying monkeys out to make sure to scrub it from the internet as best they could.
So. It's not going to happen.
No. I mean, there's depths to the internet, but that will live forever.
True.
No, that's too bad.
Cool. So, I know we asked you this question the last time you were on, but it has been, you know, 10 months, and maybe the answer has changed. But, of course, the question that we always like to wrap up on is, how do you measure success?
Oh, goodness. Well, I think that success is... I think, you know, it's a complicated question. I think that making something that you like, that you feel accomplishes your goal, is important. I think there's definitely some aspect of without sort of trying to please everybody, because you're not going to be able to please everybody.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I know that from the first issue. And just from, I mean, I'm just talking about family reactions. I got some reactions where some people said, hey, this is good. Great. And some people said, I have some thoughts. Mm-hmm. How you could have improved this? I'm like, oh, okay. But I think writing something that tells, you know, whatever your message is, your truth is, and understanding that you're going to grow and you're going to be able to do better next time. Because I think that certainly it's like with a draft, you know, the first draft is going to be crap. And, be a success. And then arriving at something where you feel confident enough to put it out there and sort of show the world, you know, this is what I was trying to say. And I think that, you know, we'd all like to be monetarily successful as well, but.
Well, yes.
But I think that ultimately creating something that makes you happy, that shares, you know, something with the world, is the goal here. Plus, I just want to see more cool queer ladies kicking ass. So that's part of my goal here.
Well, that's a good answer.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. You have anything else you'd like to add before we sign off?
No, I think I'm pretty good. We've reached the point of the evening where all three cats are awake and the dog's awake and everybody is now ready to contribute their comments to the interview. So
that's the perfect time for you to try to sleep.
Yes. Well, it's only a 6:40 here. So
that's right.
I'm up. It actually doesn't get dark until 8 something here now, so which is pretty darn awesome.
Nice.
Cool. All right. John, do you have anything you'd like to add?
No, I can't wait to read the issues.
Well, I hope you guys like it. I mean, as I said, it's a lot of fun to write. And, you guys really get to see the plant in this one. And you get to see Florence in her lab, which was a lot of fun to create.
Cool. Definitely will check that out. And again, for everyone listening, go to Kickstarter, look up I Am Hexed. Of course, link is in the description of the episode, as always. And don't forget, if you're donating blood, it must be your own blood. Oh, wait, I'm sorry.
What?
On that note, boys and girls, as always, thanks for listening, and don't let your cape caught in the door. Have a good week.